7:58 p.m. Friday night, the phone buzzed again. Not a friend, not family, a supervisor, the kind who smiled in daylight and tightened the leash after hours. The message came dressed like work. Quick question, small ask. But the timing was the point. So was the read receipt. So was the pause that followed when no reply came fast enough. Another buzz, then another. Each one pushed a little further. Each one tested how much silence cost, a schedule, an evaluation, a promotion that could vanish without paperwork or explanation. The employee stood in a quiet room, thumb hovering, knowing the job lived inside that screen now. Unwanted messages become evidence, but evidence takes time, and time is what power uses best. Chapter 1. After hours, the first message landed like a mistake. It came at 9:15 p.m., 2 weeks after the new schedule posted, 2 weeks after the supervisor started using the employee's first name more than necessary. The employee had already made dinner and shut the laptop. The day was done. The phone lit up anyway. Can you check something for me real quick? No greeting. No context. The supervisor's name on the screen made the employee sit up straight. It was reflex. The body learned it before the mind could argue. The employee stared at the message. There was nothing urgent in the job that required a late night text. The supervisor had email. The supervisor had the office chat system. The supervisor had the ability to wait until morning like everyone else. The employee typed a reply, erased it, typed again. Sure, what do you need? Three dots appeared immediately. The supervisor was already waiting. I knew you'd answer. You're reliable, unlike some people. It was a compliment with teeth. The employee felt it, even through glass. The supervisor followed with a file name and a request that could have waited. The employee opened the laptop and handled it in 10 minutes, then sent a short confirmation. Done. The supervisor replied with a thumbs up emoji. The employee did not. The next late text came three nights later. It arrived at 8:47 p.m. with the same casual tone, the same assumption that the employee existed on demand. You free. The employee held the phone a little farther away, like distance could change meaning. That wording was not about work, not clearly, not cleanly. The employee waited, hoping another message would follow, something practical, something that would make the first one harmless. Nothing came. The employee replied anyway. I'm home. If it's work-related, I can check tomorrow morning. The supervisor answered a minute later. It is work, relax. You always make things so formal. The employee felt the trap set itself. Formal meant boundaries. Boundaries meant defiance. The supervisor did not like defiance. A small task followed. Another quick thing, the employee did it, again, and when it was done, the supervisor did not say thank you. Instead, the supervisor wrote, I like that you don't give me attitude. Makes you stand out. The employee read it twice. There was nothing explicit, nothing the employee could point to and say this is wrong. But it was wrong in the way smoke is wrong when you smell it inside a closed room. The employee set the phone down and tried to let the feeling pass. It did not. On Monday, the supervisor acted normal. Smiling in the morning meeting, laughing at a joke that did not deserve laughter, walking the floor like a person who owned the air. The employee kept eyes on the desk, tried to blend into routine. Then the supervisor stopped by. You doing okay? You seemed quiet. The employee's throat tightened. I'm fine. The supervisor leaned in, voice low, not quite a whisper. Good. I need you focused. Big quarter coming up. You want to keep being seen as dependable. The employee nodded. The supervisor walked away. That afternoon, the schedule changed. One shift moved. The employee's name stayed the same, but the hours shifted to a less desirable slot, a small punishment disguised as operational need. The employee didn't complain. Complaints were how you got labeled difficult. At 6:12 p.m. that night, another text arrived. How did the new schedule feel? It was not a question. It was a reminder. The employee stared at it, then replied with something safe. I can make it work. The response came instantly. Knew you could. That's why I look out for you. Look out for. You meant I can move pieces when I want. The messages didn't stop. They threaded through evenings and weekends like a slow leak. Sometimes the supervisor asked for work. Sometimes the supervisor asked questions that pretended to be personal interest. You live alone, right? What time you usually sleep? You always look tired lately. The employee answered less, short replies, delayed replies. The supervisor noticed, you ignoring me. No, just busy. Busy doing what? The employee read that one with a tight jaw. It was the first time the supervisor demanded an explanation for the employee's life outside the job. The employee chose the simplest answer. Family stuff. Three dots appeared, then vanished, then appeared again. You know, I can be understanding when you're honest with me. The employee's hands went cold. The supervisor wanted confession. Not because it mattered, but because it trained obedience. If the employee explained personal time, the supervisor owned it. If the employee apologized, the supervisor owned that too. The employee did not apologize. The employee replied, "Thanks, I'll be available during work hours." A long pause. The read receipt sat there staring back. Then the supervisor wrote, "Don't do that. Don't try to set rules with me. You want me to support you. You stay cooperative. Support you. Cooperative." The words were simple. The pressure behind them wasn't. The next day at work, the supervisor called the employee into a small office. The door didn't close all the way, but it didn't need to. Privacy was the point. The supervisor sat back, casual. "You've been a little distant. Anything you want to tell me?" The employee kept eyes on the corner of the desk. "No." The supervisor smiled. "Okay. I'll tell you then. Your performance review is coming up. There's flexibility in how that looks. I can frame you as a team player, or I can frame you as someone who's hard to manage. People don't realize how much those little labels follow you." The employee felt a pulse in the ears. "I do my work. I know you do. That's why I like you." The supervisor said it like a fact, like preference, like ownership. When the employee left the office, the phone buzzed again, even though it was still daylight. "You look good today. Don't get weird about compliments. You know, I'm on your side." The employee stopped walking. The hallway felt too bright. The air felt thin. At the desk, the employee opened the message thread and scrolled. It had already become a timeline. Dates, times, tone shifts. The employee saw the pattern clearly now. The supervisor's work messages were the door. The personal lines were the test. The schedule changes were the leverage. The employee opened the screenshot function. One image, then another. The supervisor's name at the top, the timestamp at the bottom, the words in between. The employee saved the images into a folder labeled with a boring name, something that would not draw attention if someone glanced at the screen. Then the employee emailed them to a private address, not work email, not something the company controlled. It felt like hiding. It felt like preparing for a fight the employee did not want. That night, the supervisor texted at 10:31 p.m. "You up?" The employee didn't answer. 2 minutes later, "Hello." The employee didn't answer. 5 minutes later, "I see you read it." The employee's stomach turned. The read receipt had been turned into a weapon. Even silence was monitored. Even quiet had a price. The supervisor wrote again, "You know what happens when you stop communicating? People think you're not engaged. You don't want that." The employee looked at the phone, then at the screenshot saved and backed up. Evidence existed now, but it was still private, still unspoken, still powerless unless the employee made it real. The employee typed a reply, then deleted it. Then the supervisor sent one more message, shorter than the rest, stripped of fake friendliness. "Answer me." The employee's thumb hovered over the screen, caught between fear and proof, and the phone buzzed again with an incoming change request for tomorrow's shift. Chapter 2. Read receipts. The shift change hit before sunrise. The employee saw it in the scheduling app at 6:05 a.m., a notification framed like routine maintenance. Different hours. Worse hours. No explanation. No request. Just an update that rewrote the week. The supervisor had not said a word about it. Not in person. Not by text. But the timing answered everything. At 8:12 a.m., the phone buzzed again. "Saw the schedule update. We'll talk later." Later meant when witnesses were gone. Later meant behind a door that almost closed. The employee worked the shift without speaking unless required. Every task felt heavier, slower, watched. The supervisor passed by twice, eyes lingering, smile thin. "You okay?" "Yes." "Good. I hate tension. It throws teams off." The employee nodded. The supervisor moved on. At 9:40 p.m. that night, the messages returned. "You really gonna stay quiet?" The employee did not respond. 2 minutes passed. "I don't like being ignored." The employee waited until the clock rolled to 10, then replied with one sentence. "Please keep communication work related and during work hours." The three dots appeared immediately. Stayed longer than usual. Wow, so that's how you want to do this. The employee's chest tightened. The words felt like a door slamming shut somewhere unseen. You're being sensitive. I've been nothing but supportive. Supportive showed up again. The supervisor leaned on it like a shield. I don't feel comfortable with the messages outside work. There it was, the line. Simple, clear, not an accusation, just a statement. The response came sharp. Careful, you're starting to sound ungrateful. The employee stopped typing, screenshotted the exchange, saved it, emailed it. The supervisor followed up. People don't usually push back when someone's helping them. The employee set the phone face down and tried to sleep. Sleep didn't come easy. Every vibration from the nightstand felt like another demand. The next morning, the supervisor assigned the employee tasks usually given to new hires. Repetitive, visible, a quiet demotion that did not show up on paper. A coworker noticed. They got you doing inventory again, just where they need me. The coworker lowered their voice. You didn't do anything wrong. The employee almost laughed. Wrong was not the point. Control was. That afternoon, the supervisor texted again, this time during work hours, just enough to look appropriate on the surface. Stop by my office before you leave. The office smelled like coffee and stale air. The supervisor sat back, arms crossed. You want to explain your tone last night? I asked for work-related communication during work hours. The supervisor smiled, slow and tight. You know how this goes, right? I'm the one who decides what's appropriate. The employee met the supervisor's eyes for the first time in days. I'm just asking for boundaries. The word landed hard. Boundaries. You people love that word. The supervisor leaned forward. Let me be clear. I don't need your permission to message you. And I don't appreciate being talked to like I'm doing something wrong. The employee said nothing. Good. Because I'd hate for this to turn into a performance issue. The threat was clean now. No disguise. That night, the supervisor did not text. The employee waited anyway, nerves tight, phone close. Silence stretched longer than the messages ever did. The next day, the supervisor sent a single text at 7:18 p.m. Miss our talks. The employee stared at it, screenshotted it, saved it. The tone had shifted again. Not work, not even pretense, just entitlement. The employee did not reply. At 8:50 p.m., another message came. I'm being nice. Don't make me regret it. That was the line. No implication left. No gray space. The employee forwarded the screenshots to the private folder again, then opened the message details. Dates, times, frequency. The pattern looked different when laid out cold. Late nights, escalation when ignored, schedule changes following pushback. The employee turned off red receipts. It didn't stop the messages. Why can't I see when you read my texts? That's suspicious. You hiding something. The employee took a breath and did nothing. The next morning, the supervisor confronted the employee in the hallway. You mess with your phone settings. I adjusted my privacy. The supervisor laughed sharp. You think you're smarter than this. The employee walked past without answering. It felt dangerous. It also felt necessary. That afternoon, the employee told one coworker, not everything, just enough. They've been texting me a lot. Outside work, the coworker frowned. That's not okay. The employee shook their head. I don't want this spreading. I just needed someone to know. The coworker nodded, eyes serious. If you need a witness later, I'm here. The employee didn't show the messages. Not yet. Evidence stayed safer when fewer people touched it. At 9:34 p.m. that night, the supervisor sent the message that removed all doubt. You know, if you played this right, I could make things very easy for you. Or very hard. No emojis, no jokes, just leverage. The employee's hands shook. Screenshot, save, email. Then another message followed. I'm trying to help you. Don't be stupid. The employee stared at the screen until the words blurred, then placed the phone down carefully, like it might explode. The next morning, the employee drafted notes. Not emotional, just facts, dates, times, direct quotes. The employee printed nothing, saved nothing on work devices. Everything stayed personal, controlled. At work, the supervisor avoided the employee. No smiles, no jokes, just cold glances and clipped instructions. At 4:20 p.m., an email from the supervisor landed in the work inbox. Please see me tomorrow morning. Mandatory. The employee closed the laptop and sat still. Mandatory meant the trap was tightening or breaking. That night, the employee assembled the record, screenshots ordered by date, a timeline written clean without commentary, just sequence. just behavior. The employee stared at the folder for a long time. Proof existed now, but proof did not protect on its own. Proof required action. Action meant risk. The phone buzzed one last time that night. "Tomorrow we clear this up, one way or another." The employee did not respond. Instead, the employee opened the company handbook and searched for the reporting policy, heart pounding, knowing that once the record left private hands, it could never be taken back. Chapter 3. The record. The meeting request hit the calendar at 7:40 a.m. No subject line, just the supervisor's name and a conference room the employee had never used before. Glass walls, no privacy tint, a room chosen to look official and feel exposed. The employee didn't go alone. At 8:25 a.m., the employee walked past the conference room and straight into human resources. The folder was already open on the phone, screenshots arranged in order, notes stripped of opinion, just dates, just times, just words. "I need to report something." The HR representative closed the door and listened without interruption. No nodding, no facial reaction, just attention. The employee handed over the record. "These are messages from my supervisor, outside work hours, repeated, after I asked for it to stop." HR scrolled slowly. The room stayed quiet except for the hum of the vent. "How long has this been happening?" The employee answered with the timeline. No shaking voice, no extra explanation. HR asked one question that mattered. "Did you tell them to stop?" "Yes, in writing." HR nodded once. That was enough. The supervisor arrived at 9 sharp expecting control. Instead, the supervisor was directed into a different room. Smaller. No glass. No audience. The employee waited. At 10:12 a.m., HR called the employee back in. The supervisor sat across the table, arms folded, face tight. HR spoke first. "We've reviewed the messages." The supervisor smiled thin. "They misunderstood. I was mentoring, checking in. You know how sensitive people are these days." HR did not smile back. "The frequency, timing, and content show a pattern." The supervisor shifted. "Those texts were taken out of context." HR slid the phone across the table. The timestamps were visible. Nights, weekends, escalation after delayed responses. Context is in the sequence. The supervisor looked at the screen and said nothing. HR continued. "You reference scheduling, evaluations, and support in proximity to personal remarks." The supervisor leaned back. "You can't prove intent." HR's voice stayed even. "Intent isn't required for policy violation." The room felt colder. The supervisor glanced at the employee for the first time. Not with confidence, with calculation. "This is an overreaction." HR looked at the employee. "Do you feel safe reporting this?" "Yes." That word carried weight. The supervisor felt it. "Turn back. We'll be placing you on administrative leave, effective immediately, while we complete the review." The supervisor laughed once, short and sharp. "This is ridiculous. HR, this meeting is over." The supervisor left without another word. The employee stayed seated, hands still, heart racing. HR outlined next steps: formal investigation, interview notes, temporary reporting changes, support resources offered without pressure. The employee listened, nodded, asked one question. "Will there be retaliation?" HR answered carefully. "Retaliation is prohibited. If it occurs, report it immediately." The employee left the room and went back to the desk. The floor looked the same. The lights hummed the same. But the pressure had shifted. The phone stayed quiet. 2 weeks later, the outcome came by email. Policy violation substantiated. Disciplinary action taken. Supervisor removed from position of authority. No details, no spectacle, just fact. The employee sat alone and let the breath out slowly. Relief didn't feel like victory. It felt like exhaustion easing. The schedule returned to normal. The tasks followed. The job continued. Some coworkers asked questions. The employee kept answers simple. "It's handled." The supervisor did not return. The employee deleted nothing. The record stayed archived, a reminder of what it took to be believed. Late one evening, the phone buzzed, a new message, not from the supervisor. "You did the right thing." The employee stared at the screen, then set the phone down. Power had lived in silence for a long time. It didn't disappear. It just changed hands, leaving behind proof, cost, and the knowledge that accountability never erases what happened. It only stops it from continuing.